Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Six Emperor Tyrannus News. I'm your host, Mark Matheny, and it's Sunday evening. And of course, this has been a very eventful week. We've seen lots of things going on in the news with more, you know, attacks on President Trump, blaming him from the false missile attack to making statements in during the meeting on DACA and building the wall and so forth, where they, you know, allegedly say that he called African countries the SHIT holes and other things. So this is what I'm going to be talking about tonight. It's really disconcerting to hear every time you go on the radio, every time you go on the news, every time you watch TV or social media, to hear that, you know, the majority of white Americans are racist. And that's what it seems to, the media seems to portray, the mainstream media, the flyby media, as Rush Limbaugh would say. They constantly want to portray Americans, white Americans, particularly white males, as racist. And it's sad because this only further goes to divide America. And, excuse me, out of all the countries in the world, you know, the United States is a beacon of light to these other countries, primarily, regardless of what anyone would say. Now, here lately this week, you know, you had President Trump in this meeting talking about DACA and talking about getting the wall and wanting to make negotiations with the Democrats to do something in order to have the wall built. And at the same time, make some type of deal on DACA, okay? So in there, it was reported by Dick Durbin, the Democrat, that President Trump said, why are we having all these people from, I'll say, crap hole countries in place of the SHIT? Why are we having these people from crap hole countries come to the United States? And then, you know, he went on to, they said that he went on to say, why don't we have somebody, people from like Norway? And then, you know, right after that, there were a lot of memes and things on Facebook and social media and so on, showing that people from Norway, you know, have better living standards apparently than the United States and would not want to come to America. Well, obviously, that's really what, you know, those who support President Trump are saying. We're saying it's not an attack on black people from African countries to say that those countries are crappy. It is apparent that if you go in and look at these countries, they are in shambles, and it's sad. It's not a good thing. It's not something to brag about. It's not something to be happy about. It's something that we should be very sad about, that these countries are underdeveloped and underindustrialized, and therefore they have all kinds of problems with everyday sewage to electricity to food, medicine, things like this. And it's a sad thing, but it is a reality. The people who are coming from those countries, coming to the United States, are not coming to the United States because their countries are beacons of light, because their countries are industrially prosperous and sanitarily great. they're leaving those countries because they're crappy. And but that's not saying that black people are dirty or bad or anything like that. That's and anyone who would say that, they should be condemned for that. And that was not the intention of the president. You know, it looks like President Trump was upset with the Democrats because they were not coming out with a plan that they could all agree upon, obviously. But on the left, they want to continually pour these people from countries that are not going to help us, basically, and at the same time, primarily are from high crime rate countries. And that was one of the things that the president in this meeting was talking about. They want to bring these people into the United States. And all he was saying was, why are we doing this? You know, predominantly, if you look on maps, I was talking about it in a video I did recently, but, you know, places like all of South America, Mexico, basically, El Salvador, Mexico, all of these places are, the crime rates are so high. You have a high chance of being murdered or raped or killed there, robbed, kidnapped. And El Salvador was one of the countries, and then the African countries as well. You have, and especially Somalia, for example, and we have a lot of people coming from Somalia to the United States. And then we have instances of terrorist attacks in the last couple years from Somalian Islamists. So this is why, this is the concern. It's not because they're brown skin. That is not the problem. It's the ideology that they are bringing and the fact that they are not wanting to assimilate here in the United States and so on. That's one of the problems. So that's part of the issue. Now, Democrats came out and they are condemning the, you know, the crap hole remarks, calling it racist and attacking the president about that, and then saying that, you know, he is a racist. And while they do that, though, on the other hand, they continue to embrace Planned Parenthood, which is an organization that aborts predominantly black and Hispanic children, babies. So what is the worst crime here? Is it that someone said something about countries that happens to be true, maybe a harsh reality, a tough truth? Or nothing is said about these unborn children that are aborted every day. These remarks that were alleged to have been said by President Trump, which he categorically denies, first were reported by the Washington Post on Thursday, and then they attributed several people who were briefed on the meeting and people familiar with the meeting, stating that President Trump had said these words, and yet there were a couple of Republican congressmen officials that stated that they did not hear President Trump say these words. So, you know, this is the argument. Now, my opinion is it's not surprising if President Trump had said that. It's not like the first time we have not heard President Trump say curse words during the campaign and during the presidency. Am I offended by it? Not really, but it's one thing to get a little upset about it. It's another thing to make it a federal issue, federal crime, and so on, and call him a racist. I don't think that he's a racist, but again, you know, I have friends and I know people that are going to just, till the day they die, no matter what is going on, they're going to believe that Trump's a racist and they're going to go with that propaganda. And speaking of propaganda, I do want to read out of a book that previously that I had gotten recently. Very good book, by the way. I will promote it for Mark Dice. It's called The True Story of Fake News, and pretty interesting how mainstream media manipulates millions. And he has some good points in here, but he says, I'm just going to read a little bit of it, not much of it, on agenda setting. He says that the mainstream media often steers the public conversation by giving constant coverage to certain stories which reinforce the ideologies they're trying to promote. They'll often choose an isolated incident that's making news in the local community where it happened, and it has no real national significance. The major networks will coincidentally determine it to be one of the top stories in the country and then sensationalize it, so the incident then becomes a widely talked about topic. Now, as I'm talking about this, as I'm reading this book, think about some of the things that have been happening recently concerning President Trump, you know, tweeting and talking, you know, basic otherwise mundane things that most people don't even see unless it's brought out into the news and, you know, brought to the front, to the forefront, to make people aware of what's going on. It says these stories are often include rare police brutality incidents involving a white police officer and a black suspect, but when it's a white officer and a white victim, or a black officer and a white victim, the incidents remain local stories and don't get much national attention. Similarly, if a celebrity happens to call a gay or transgender person a derogatory name, then the big networks have all the panels of pundits complain about it for hours, days, or even weeks on end, and then emphasize how hateful and dangerous such language is. When those mountains out of molehills are turned into top stories on the evening news of the three big broadcast networks, NBC, ABC, and CBS, it doesn't take a professional media analyst to see a pattern and realize there's coordination among these companies behind the scenes to decide which topics are top stories. It's statistically impossible that the big three would regularly choose the same little-known local stories from news wires on nationally. Many events of the day warrant being the top stories on all networks, but most do not, and they shouldn't make any further than their local channels, but yet they regularly get the national spotlight, and it's always when they fit the current agenda of the time, which is a left agenda. And now, what he says is the technical term for what they're doing is called agenda setting. They magnify selected stories and topics through their constant coverage and endless panel discussions about every little detail. Talking for hours on end about the stories creates a self-fulfilling prophecy by building certain instances and major issues and by treating them as if they are major issues when they are not, and getting people to talk and think about them so much they become major issues. And this is, you know, this is exactly what has happened with several different topics with President Trump. You know, one time was that he had two scoops of ice cream as opposed to everyone else who had one. This, that, you know, when CNN News and them cover that, you know, agenda setting. I mean, this is, it's ridiculous. We remember that, you know, they're attacking President Trump, stating that he is, you know, colluding with Russians and things. Meanwhile, what's not really talked about in the news are major issues like real Russian collusion, such as Uranium One, former President Bill Clinton, and Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and Russian agencies, Russian companies with Uranium One, and bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and so on. Those things are not covered in the news, but yet they want to cover, you know, the fact that President Trump said a curse word while he was in a meeting, or that he had two scoops of ice cream where everybody else had one scoop. So, but I'm going to digress on that and talk about how the left while they want to make a big issue out of President Trump saying a bad word. But yet, Dick Durbin, the man who accused President Trump of this, is the same one, as well as his party, the Democrat Party, who want to prop up Planned Parenthood, which is an organization, by the way, that's now under investigation by the U.S. State Department because they have allegations of profiteering from selling body parts of babies that have been aborted. But the Democrats don't want to talk about that, and they don't seem to care about that, those black lives that matter. And about 59 million abortions have been performed in the country since the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, and nearly 18 million of them have been black babies. Now, it's been reported in Breitbart News. I know a lot of people don't like Breitbart News, but this is a report that Alan Guttmacher Institute put out, a reputable institute, that a pro-abortion rights group has also provided data showing that about 30% of all abortions in the U.S. are performed on black women, with another 25% performed on Hispanic women. But where is Gutierrez and Schumer and Pelosi and all of them concerning this? I haven't heard them talking about this. And if you understand the origin of Planned Parenthood, then you know that it's based on eugenics, racism, elitism, and that Margaret Sanger was the mother, so to speak, who gave birth to the world's largest abortion chain. And that was said by Ryan Bomberger, who is the chief creative officer of the Radiance Foundation. He stated, in the city where Planned Parenthood began, more black babies are aborted than born alive. According to the New York Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, this is not the result of justice. It's the result of animus. So where's the outrage for all of these children who would have lives, who would have futures, who are aborted? And where's the outrage from the Democratic Party? Nowhere to be found. But yet they want to say that President Trump is a racist. Bomberger also commented on the irony that left-wing politicians uphold Planned Parenthood, founded by a eugenist, but they cite racism as the downfall of the United States. Now, Bomberger went on to say that liberals found racism in every institution of American life and continue to do so, except in the one industry that kills for a living. He says abortion is the number one killer in the black community. That's about 363,705 abortions versus 285,000 deaths from all causes of death combined. So you got more children, babies being aborted than all other causes of death among the black community. And he's saying there's no outrage there. No one's crying racism there. Now, to be fair, I have heard black organizations and I have read from a couple that are calling this out, and it's a good thing that they are. This is a eugenicist policy. This is an elitist policy, and it should be called out. But Sanger, she began the Negro Project, it was called, in 1939, and she worked to bring birth control to blacks in an effort to reduce their population, joined with elite and well-known African-Americans such as Mary McLeod Bethune, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Sr. The Negro Project was sold as a solution to poverty and high birth rates among the black community, and at the same time that Sanger was promoting her theory of eliminating the unfit, she also condemned charitable organizations that she believed were elevating the very population that needed to be weeded out, as she stated. And if you go back and read about Margaret Sanger and some of her quotes, you'll see that she was very racist, and she was the founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, Hillary Clinton, who lost, by the way, Hillary, what happened? You lost. She stated once, "I admire Margaret Sanger enormously." And she said this when she was accepting a Planned Parenthood award in 2009. She said her courage and tenacity and her vision, she admired these things. And she says, "When I think about what Margaret Sanger did all those years in Brooklyn, I am really in awe of her. And there are a lot of lessons we can learn from her life and the cause she launched and fought for and sacrificed for so greatly." How about that? Do you want to be in awe of Margaret Sanger for murdering black children and saying they need to be weeded out and that blacks were unfit? He is outraged about that, but they get upset because President Trump says he doesn't want immigrants coming from. And you know, and again, it's not even whether he said it or not, who knows? But coming from crap hole countries, countries that have severe problems that need to be addressed, obviously. But is the United Nations addressing them, that noble organization, that noble institution that claims to be about equal rights and human rights and so on, the same organization that is corrupt and full of fraud and crime, basically, you know, that have had several allegations of crime against them for atrocities being committed and so on by UN troops. There was a tweet from the Planned Parenthood black community that went out and they tweeted about President Trump when President Trump, stated this. They stated, "Attacking black immigrants and people in Haiti is racist." Plain and simple, they said. Trump's comments yesterday were consistent with his administration's systematic assault on black and Latino immigrants, people of color, and we will not stand for it, neither should you. But was President Trump attacking blacks and Latinos? Well, if you go back and listen to the whole thing, which, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, basically in reference to Haiti, he wasn't even talking about Haiti. He was talking about African countries. And second of all, President Trump has had a good relationship with the Haitians, and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have had a very, very, very bad relationship with Haiti. They hate the Clintons because of the corruption, the stealing and looting that happened by the Clintons. And you can ask anyone from Haiti, any of the delegates in Haiti, the president, the vice president, any of these people, and they'll all tell you that. But this is not going to be reported in the lamestream news on CNN, the Clinton News Network, the Communist News Network, the Cynical News Network, excuse me, or the Counterfeit News Network. Instead, they're just going to tell you that President Trump's a racist. And it's really sad because when I look at social media and so on, you know, I have lots of friends that I love from every ethnic background. And all I see is the fact that they're dead set on not liking President Trump. And that's fine. You know, you have your right to believe whatever you want to believe. You know, I can't stop you from that. But like I said, the reason that President Trump was talking about high crime countries and not accepting immigrants was because we are trying to keep incidences of terrorism and things down in the United States. And now it's been reported in several news articles that I've seen that President Trump tweeted out that DACA is probably dead, and they have taken a strong stance and have blamed the Democrats for not having, you know, the ability to pass a good bill concerning DACA. Now, this is from Fox News. I'm going to play a little portion of this so you can hear it, and then we'll talk about it. See if I can get it to play here.
Moments ago, President Trump stating that a deal with Democrats may not happen. In a tweet, he wrote this just a few minutes ago. He said, DACA is probably dead because the Democrats don't really want it. They just want to talk and take desperately needed money away from our military. And a few other tweets after that as well.
Yeah, a couple coming. Raja, Deputy White House Press Secretary, he joins us now to weigh in. Raja, the teleprompter demoted you. Principal White, Deputy White House Press Secretary, we're happy to have you, sir. Thank you. And good morning. Are we to read into this tweet that the president does not feel like he has honest partners in the Democrats?
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me on this morning. I think what you should read into this tweet is that the events of the last, you know, 48 to 72 hours really don't inspire us about the things we need to do to get to a good deal. I think earlier in the week, you had the president host both Democrats and Republicans at the White House. They had a great discussion. They came together on four pieces that they wanted to look at for further legislation. That was DACA. That was also border security and the wall. That was ending the visa lottery system. And it was ending chain migration. And now Democrats appear to be moving the goalposts. You don't have a meeting in the Oval Office and then leak the contents of that meeting if you're serious about cutting a deal. And so the events recently really don't inspire us.
Well, Raj, I mean, and now we've seen in The Hill a characterization from a Dick Durbin aide that they felt like they were ambushed, Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham, by, you know, hardliner folks on immigration. Here's the quote right here. It says, Graham and Durbin expected to have a meeting. They show up, and there's this anti-immigrant cast of characters there. And that was obviously designed by Stephen Miller to try to kill the deal. So was that meeting about reaching a deal or killing the deal? Because Dick Durbin says that they were trying to kill it.
It was about discussing a potential deal. The president wants to see real border security. He wants to see movement on chain migration and on ending the visa lottery system. Those things have to be components of any kind of serious deal. Otherwise, you're going to have a situation where years from now, not very many years, maybe 3 or 4 years from now, you're going to have another several hundred thousand illegal immigrants coming to the United States. And we need to be offering them more protections. That's not a scenario that we want or that the president wants to negotiate. We've got to end chain migration and have real border security for any kind of deal to take place.
Raj, Senator Durbin, Senator Lindsey Graham, this is a self-appointed group of senators coming together for this to solve this problem. Could the president just appoint a different group of congressmen and senators who he thinks are fair brokers?
Well, I think that there was a big room filling the cabinet room earlier last week. All those individuals have some skin in the game, have been involved in various levels of negotiations. We want anybody in that room to continue talking. But what we want to see is a deal that really makes progress on these fronts. We need a border wall on the southern border. We need several hundred miles of new fencing and physical barriers. We need thousands of new agents. We need removal authority at the southern border.
Where are we on that, Raj? Is it go back to the drawing board for Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham? Is it a different group? Give us a sense.
Well, I think that there's a number of ongoing conversations. They're going to continue. And I think that there are other folks that were in these ongoing negotiations. They're going to come up with other proposals. Again, we have about a month and a half until the DACA program begins its orderly wind down. But we don't want to see that happen. And so we want to see people of good faith to have private conversations. We don't want them spilling into the public view immediately. And we want to see if they can cut a deal that, again, makes real progress on ending illegal immigration so we're not back here a few years from now.
Nancy Pelosi brought up the idea, you can call it an idea, you can call it a threat, depending on how you look at it in Washington, that there will be no more continuing resolutions. The Democrats are going to create the inflection point on January 19th this week. Either you make a deal on DACA or they're going to effectively shut the government down and not vote for any more short-term funding fixes. What is the White House's plan if Democrats decide to call that play?
Well, that would be very unfortunate to try to shut down the government and when you're trying to put outside pieces of legislation into a funding bill.
Roger, I get that it would be unfortunate, but people do it all the time. What's the White House's game plan?
Well, our plan is to oppose it and go to the American people and say the Democrats need to work with us to fund our national security, to fund our intelligence systems, to make sure that our military is prepared in case of any kind of emergency. I think going to the American people and making the case that Democrats are being very irresponsible, that they're shutting down the government, that they're doing the kinds of things that they pledged not to do only a few years ago will be effective.
All right, Raj, thank you very much. We saw sort of a preview of that exact same talking point in the president's tweet, that game plan from the White House. Raj, thanks a lot. Appreciate you getting up on a Sunday.
All right. So, you know, you basically see that, you know, the Democrats don't want to play. They want to play hardball. And President Trump then has basically tweeted out again that the Democrats and their demands that are causing this problem and this, you know, this delay, not the Republicans and not him. Basically, he states that the article goes, and I'll just read from the article. It says that President Trump on Sunday argued that the Democrats and their demands, not him and fellow Republicans in Congress, have throttled negotiations to provide permanent legal protection for young illegal immigrants and made clear that any such deal must end the United States lottery immigration program. He says DACA is probably dead because the Democrats don't really want it. They just want to talk and take desperately needed money away from the military. And that was one of the tweets that he put out. So he says the president and Congress are attempting to reach a deal on comprehensive immigration reform as part of a federal spending bill that Congress must pass by Friday to avoid a government shutdown. And, you know, I mean, they're always talking about government shutdowns, so they always threaten that. But they probably won't shut down the government. I mean, who knows? We'll see. But among the issues are Trump's desire for any such deal to include money for a U.S.-Mexico wall for border security and changes to the lottery and the so-called chain migration immigration programs, which I agree, they need to stop that. I mean, here, you know, we need to put a big halt on all this immigration and start really watching and limiting who we're bringing into the country. It's not a racist thing. It's for the self-preservation of the United States that we have to do this. So now the Democrats, they want the deal to include permanent protections for young illegal immigrants. Now that Trump is ending such safeguards under DACA, the executive order by former President Barack Obama. And Trump had, you know, announced last year that it was going to end on March 2018, but the Democrats and others had hoped to reach a deal before that. So and they're, you know, fighting about that. And then, you know, of course, you know, President Trump comes up and allegedly says what he says, and then they characterized it as racist, and then, you know, this is their way of fighting and making Trump look bad. And then, of course, then you get this, you know, false missile attack that took place over the weekend, too, in my opinion, to again make President Trump and the administration look like they are out of control, that, you know, they that we're on the brink of war, and that President Trump is not handling foreign affairs or domestic affairs very well. But the case is he is. But you have a predominant, dominating leftist propaganda machine called the mainstream media, predominantly pushing the idea that Trump is incompetent. And most people who are not very studious, not very aware of what's going on politically, or are brainwashed by the left, predominantly, they're just going to go with that narrative and believe that the Democrat Party is the party of, you know, blacks and gays, and they're just there for everybody, and that the Republicans are just the evil guys, although history shows otherwise. And, of course, they don't want to believe history, and they don't even want to watch or learn about it. They just want to condemn it. And anyone who, especially anyone of color, who supports the conservative side of things and that side of the narrative, they just want to say they're fake or that they're, you know, what do you call them, Uncle Toms or sellouts or whatever. And so you can't really argue with them with the facts, because they're not concerned about the facts. You know, some people say facts don't care about your feelings. Well, the Democrat side, it's our feelings don't care about your facts. It's all about feelings. It's all about emotions that they, you know, that they believe is that's what pushes them. So the Democratic elites, well, not just the Democratic elites, but the elites in general, through social engineering, have prepped the society to be more democratic and socialist thinking, and then have pushed the Alinsky plan and so on. So efficiently that this is where we're at now. And now, after this meeting, President Trump also stated in one of his tweets that he wants the system to be more of a merit-based system. And on Fox News, there was the Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, who was at a meeting, who was at that meeting, the same meeting with Dick Durbin and all of them. She was on Fox News, and she said that she didn't recall President Trump using that exact phrase about people coming from Haiti and some African nations, but he did use strong language, she said, on the lottery issue. And she said, I think what the president was saying is that he would like to move toward a more merited-based system that's based on the individual. And I take a bit of offense to the comments that the president is racist. So she defended the president, saying he's not racist. And but, you know, this is an easy shutdown argument. If you don't want to argue the facts and go through systematically to argue valid points, the easiest way to shut down your opponent is just to say you're racist. And that's what happens. So. But the president then tweeted and said, I, as president, want people coming into our country who are going to help us become more strong and great, people coming in through a system based on merit, not on the lotteries, no more lotteries. He said, America first. And Deputy White House Press Secretary Raj Shah on Sunday also suggested that Democrats were trying to undermine immigration negotiations with their talk. Democrats, he says, seem to be moving the goal post, he said. He says you don't have a meeting in the Oval Office and then leak contents if you're serious about cutting a deal. So, you know, again, this was an opportunity for them. President Trump was, you know, he was getting a bit harsh in there, using some tough language because they were doing a tough deal. And the Democrats, of course, that, you know, they were offended. You know, they were triggered, and of course they ran out crying that, you know, President Trump had said a bad word, like little kids in kindergarten would do, you know, because one of them said something. And this is, you know, it's unfortunate that you have this. And, you know, these lawmakers now, you've only got about a month and a half left until DACA begins to wind down. And they've got to find a solution. And instead, their solution is threats and, you know, accusations and everything else. And, oh, we're going to shut down the government unless we get this, what is extortion, basically. And they get mad when the other side tries to threaten that. But then, you know, but both sides do it. But President Trump said that in another tweet on Saturday that the Democrats are all talking no action and they're doing nothing to fix DACA. A great opportunity missed, he stated. So speaking of which, though, there is, you know, the part of that deal is to have a wall built. And there is another interesting article that hasn't been talked about on the mainstream news, but it is in some articles. WorldNet Daily talked about it, that President Trump does have a plan for getting Mexico to pay for the border wall. And remember in the campaign he was talking about we're going to have a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. Well, he says now that he plans to offer a new deal on NAFTA that's going to share increased revenues between two countries, both countries, the United States and Mexico, more equitably, and a small portion of which is going to be diverted to pay for the cost of the wall. So the Trump administration now is seeking federal funding for the wall while renegotiating the U.S. trade deal with Mexico and Canada. He says they can pay for it indirectly through NAFTA. And he was talking in an interview with Wall Street Journal, and he stated, "We make a good deal on NAFTA and say, I'm going to take a small percentage of that money, and it's going to go to the wall." Well, guess what? He says Mexico will be paying. So, and it, you know, it sounds like a good deal. Sounds like a good idea to me. He says that now he said these comments right after he was updated by his administration on the economy and the progress of the negotiations and so on. And he repeated, you know, obviously during the campaign that he was going to build this wall and he was going to get Mexico to pay for it. And Congress, and of course, tried to get money started to allocate to building the wall. But the Democrats refused. You know, they held DACA up in that place and stated they wanted to make a deal on the Deferred Action for Child Arrivals program. And then, of course, Trump then warned that if Mexico didn't agree to the terms on free trade deal known as NAFTA, that he would simply terminate the deal, period. And he said, now, Mexico may not want to make the NAFTA deal, which is okay. He said, then I'll terminate NAFTA, which I would be frankly, positive for the country. So, but here's one of the ideas, is to make the deal, make it fair, make it prosperous for both countries, and then take a small portion out of that to pay for the border wall. So ultimately causing Mexico to pay for the wall. So I think that's a good idea. We do need this wall, regardless of what anybody says. There have been some instances where it's been shown that, like in certain areas of the border along Mexico and I think New Mexico and so on, where the walls have been reinforced and so on, that instances of border crossings have gone down existentially, and also there have been a lot less drugs coming across the border due to that. So why not have the wall? Well, you know, the left, well, the elites, I should say, who are pushing this social engineering agenda, you know, of course, I always go back, and it's like beating a dead horse again, like I say, but it all goes back to destroying national sovereignty. This is primarily what the elites want to do, to destroy boundaries, national sovereignty, and create international law. And that's why they push the United Nations so hard. And that's why they push the sustainable development agenda, which is Agenda 21, which is now Agenda 2030. which is ties in with the global warming issue, which is now climate change, because they have to push laws that are going to transcend national boundaries. And so this is how they get it done. And they get these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations and think tank groups, and them with their large amounts of money to push the propaganda machines in order to brainwash the masses. And primarily in schools and so on, they, you know, they push the agenda. And the other issue is to destroy not only the national boundaries, but also the Constitution of the United States. They have to destroy these constitutions in these different countries and their idea of individualism and sovereignty and freedom, so that they can then install the new philosophies of socialism. They have to demonize capitalism, free market enterprise. All the while, if you had your eyes open and you look at places like Venezuela and other countries that have socialism as their, you know, rule of law, you see that it ends up in high inflation, low employment, and basically famine and economic collapse and dictatorships, basically. There was an article recently on the news that I saw that was showing Venezuelans, you know, running into a field and just, you know, killing cattle and just, you know, ripping it apart so that they could eat because it's gotten so bad. And, you know, it is a sad thing. I mean, it is sad. It is unfortunate to see these other countries like this, but they see a model called the United States. They see our country and how it prospers. So you would think they would want to emulate us, but no, that's not the case. But of course, you have the social engineers who are pushing a different agenda to keep these countries poor and impoverished, because that's what they want. They want to they want to keep them down. And then they've infiltrated Europe, and they've come up with the European Union, and now there are mass amounts of immigrants going in there, and Sweden is all shot to hell now. They have high crime, instances of rape all the time, gang raping and so on, predominantly from Islamic countries, whether they be brown-skinned people from the African areas that are predominantly Islamic, or from Middle Eastern countries that are Islamic. You have this barbaric way of thinking. It's, you know, it's not to belittle people. It's unfortunate, because it goes to show how that propaganda is working in those countries, and how the elites who want social engineering are now using them as pawns in the grand chessboard, as Zbigniew Brzezinski would say, to infiltrate the industrialized nations and then dominate them and bring in these new philosophies, and to destroy assimilation and to destroy that cohesiveness of those countries. Whereas here in the United States, you have primarily Christianity, Protestant Christianity primarily, and Catholic Christianity, but predominantly Protestant Christianity, and English as the national language, and the Constitution, and the U.S. flag. So they systematically are attacking all those things, attacking Christianity, attacking the Constitution, attacking the United States flag, attacking nationalism, and calling it Nazism, which it's not. We are not pushing national socialism like, you know, the philosophy of Hitler. We're not pushing national socialism. We're pushing national constitutionalism, if anything, the rights of the individual and liberty, and the right to keep and bear arms, the right to property, the value of life, But yet on the left, they pretend that they're doing these things, but their fruits show otherwise. You know, Yeshua, the Messiah, stated that you shall know a person by their fruits. He says a bitter fountain does not bring forth sweet fruits, neither does a sweet fountain bring forth bitter fruits. So, you know, you know a person by their fruits. And the agenda of the left is to attack free speech. There's been, you know, reports now that with Project Veritas showing that Twitter has been what they called shadow banning conservative groups, and you know, YouTube has gone through and demonetized predominantly conservative groups and organizations that are not pushing the state narrative of socialism, basically, and liberalism, extreme leftism. So this is the problem that we have. So, but on the other hand, too, there has been there was an article, an interesting article in Axios, that there is the Trump's Day of Reckoning, it states, and how Republicans are going to have a problem coming up. It says one thing that could dramatically diminish President Trump's chances of avoiding impeachment and chalking up legislative wins is Democrats winning in the House, it states. And then it goes through and says there's a series of developments. Trump knows this is no longer plausible but probable. Hill sources tell us that a House Democratic takeover is now likely, and one strategist close to Republican leaders believes that a loss of the House has been, and top Republicans don't see any way of avoiding it, they say. It also states in this article that it would take a flip of 24 seats of Dems to take over. The average loss for the president's party in his first midterm is usually about 32 seats, and we're hearing forecasts of 40 seats or more losses. And it says, of course, you can't predict outcomes this far out, but those facts are scaring the hell out of Republicans. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. I hear some things that are people, for instance, like Jamie Dimon, who stated that basically the Democrats have no viable candidate for 2020, and they seem to be just putting their foot in their mouths every day, in my opinion. But it is something to take note of. They say that 8 House GOP chairs have retired. It says you don't climb to the top of power in Congress and leave unless you feel confident your reign will soon end. Another factor, chairmanships are term limited for Gingrich era reform. And record retirements are popping up now for the GOP, it states. Already 29 GOP seats are open, a pace far exceeding the past 2 elections that saw power change hands. And Democrats outperformed, it says, their norms in turnout and total votes in all 7 2017 elections is a clear indication of energy. Well, I don't know about that either, but record numbers of Democratic women are voting and considering running for office. This, more than anything, is a reaction to Trump and the Me Too movement, it states. The Me Too movement, you know, this more propaganda, in my opinion. But it states that Republicans typically hold a built-in advantage in House elections in modern politics, and the reason is that a combination of congressional districts designed for a GOP edge, plus the fact that old white voters outperform in off-year elections because they actually vote. But Democrats' momentum looks like they could drench the map, they state. So with a Democratic House, it goes on to say Trump faces not only a high risk of impeachment proceedings, but hostile chairs with subpoena power who can tie up the administration with hearing and document requests. I agree with that. So it's important for the Republican Party, the GOP, to hold their ground. And I think that if the president and the White House and them come through this Russian collusion, which I think they will, because there isn't any real evidence of anything, and at the same time, the news is brought out more and more on all social media, on alternative news, on InfoWars, on Drudge Report, on, you know, Breitbart, Cernovich, and Milo, and all of these different groups bring out the fact that these indictments are coming out on Hillary Clinton, on and the DOJ and the FBI, and all of them are, you know, basically having to run for cover because they have been a part of all of this, then I think it's going to look good for Republicans. And hopefully also with the fact that the economy is doing well under President Trump right now, I'm praying more and more people, especially our brothers and sisters of the darker persuasion, who are our brothers and sisters, because we're one race called the human race. I hope that more and more of them can see that the Republican Party, I'm not talking about the neo-Republicans, the neocons, I'm talking about the idea of conservatism and the idea of pro-life and the idea of individual thought and individual value and worth and free market, capital, free market, true capitalism, and these ideas of that they will grasp these things, and they don't have to become a Republican per se, but conservatism in its pure form, you know, based on the Constitution and the rights of man, you know, the idea of, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the right to property, and so on, the right to defend yourself. Hopefully they can see this and get out of this whole idea of needing a safe space and, you know, being offended by everything that happens, by every wind that blows. You know, scripture states that, you know, that it talks about a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. He's carried about to and fro by every wind of doctrine that comes along. Well, in the same way, you know, you've got to have a firm stance on what you believe, but it shouldn't be due to indoctrination and propaganda. Like, you know, the other thing is, too, is it's not racist to want to have national boundaries and be nationalistic in your ideas, because if we are that way, we would hope that these other countries would be the same way and would want what better for themselves as well and for their countries. You know, and I love the United States of America. I've been to other countries, and I love the United States. And the only other country that I would probably live in besides the United States would be the land of Israel. Other than that, I don't want to be living in any other countries. And it's no disrespect to those countries, but just some of these countries are just, some of them I probably wouldn't last 10 minutes in, just because of the corruption and the crime and the scandals and, you know, just the hatred. If you look up, people want to say the United States is a racist country, but if you look on the scale of racism, it's one of the least racist countries. And this is by independent agencies and research centers that show this, you know, so I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But it's interesting, too. I saw this is from the Young Turks talking about why Democrats in 2020 candidates are already losers. I just thought it was interesting, and I don't always agree with them, but I wanted you to hear this concerning the Democrats and their choices for presidency coming up in 2020, some of the main serious ones that they're choosing or at least considering. And I'm going to play that real quick, and I want you to hear this. It's interesting.
And he checked it twice. The people that he put on there and the people he didn't put on there rather curious. Now, some of it was completely expected. In fact, it was expected by me. A little while back, a couple of weeks ago, in the midst of a video about who would lead the DNC, I said this. Which new direction are they going to go? Okay, in the beginning, immediately, establishment folks were considered. Now, these are not necessarily the guys who were considered for the DNC, but they were talked about sometimes in terms of maybe running for president in 2020, and in other ways talked about as the new stars of the Democratic Party. So let me dismiss them out of hand immediately. Kirsten Gillibrand, otherwise known as Hillary Clinton Light. Well, Hillary Clinton Major didn't work. Why would we go to Hillary Clinton Minor? Okay, Cory Booker, Barack Obama Light, secretly takes almost more money than anyone else in Congress from Wall Street and donors. Not remotely interested. No, no, no is the answer. Obviously, I got that partly from the buzz going around in Washington, but nobody had made a list yet of 2020 contenders. So we didn't know for sure if Booker and Gillibrand were going to be on it, let alone the others. Well, let's find out. So we now have this list from the Washington Post. Guess who's number one on the list? Senator Cory Booker. And they explain, many Democrats see the young, he's 47, charismatic African-American U.S. Senator from New Jersey as the second coming of Obama. Almost exactly how I said they would frame him a couple of weeks ago. Okay, then they go to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Whoa, couldn't have seen that coming except for the fact that I did. Now, why do they like her so much? Because of her, quote, rock star level fundraising. How did that work out for Hillary Clinton? She way outraised Donald Trump. She raised over $1 billion. What a rock star she was. All right, one more on Gillibrand. Gillibrand is, according to New York Post, is already feeling out some of the Clinton's major donors about what comes next for the party. Oh, this is so gross. It's so gross. So these are the top two contenders, the one who looks like Obama and the one who looks like Hillary Clinton. And they both raise money, just like Obama and Clinton. And they're even going to the same donors, the ones who told them to not fight aggressively, the ones who told them to capitulate to Republicans, the ones who led to this disaster that we're in. Has the establishment in Washington learned anything? Nothing at all. Let's just go back to the same old players. Hillary Clinton lost, so let's go to the person who's most like Hillary Clinton. Her donors led her to this disaster. Let's go back to the same donors. And every single person on the list, there's talk of, oh, they're from this state, and they have almost no policy conversation. Not almost, no policy conversation. He wrote two articles about it, didn't mention it at all. He would sometimes say, oh, someone is maybe a little too moderate in these times. Kamala Harris, who's the new senator-elect from California, she's more progressive. Tiny mention of that. But in almost every single person, there's a talk about funding. Where are the donors? Who do the donors want? Let's just give the people, not the people what they want, but the donors what they want. Just give it to them. So on Senator Harris, Harris is also represents the largest and most Democratic state in the country. A huge financial launch pad to a presidential bid. Through mid-October, Harris had raised more than $13 million for her Senate candidacy. The only progressive he put on the list was Senator Klobuchar, Amy Klobuchar. And, you know, she's not as progressive as some of the, you know, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, et cetera, but she's in that group. She's the boring progressive. Okay. But there was a note in her, that's the only olive branch you get. But there was a note in her description. Unlike Gillibrand, however, Klobuchar represents Minnesota, not exactly a fundraising hotbed for a national candidate. Now, Siliza doesn't know he's doing it. He lives in this bubble where the only thing that matters is donors. So if you ask him now, if he watches this video, he's like, what? But the donors are super relevant. But only the person with most money wins. Now, that's true. In the past, you had to have a lot of money, and that would certainly be one of the factors. But Bernie Sanders just showed you that you don't need those same big donors. He just did it. It's not like, God, I forgot what happened. It just happened, right? No. And he had no name recognition. And he almost caught the person with the most amount of name recognition and the most amount of infrastructure and establishment help. It was an unbelievable come from behind race. Now, he lost that race. Even though she had all those monumental advantages, she barely won. But you learn no lesson whatsoever. When it comes to the next race, you're like, how do I please, who's going to please the donors the best? That's the person who the Democrats should pick. That's the only people that should be on the list. Now, to be fair, they do have one non-politician on the list. First Lady Michelle Obama. Oh, come on, man. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So we're going to go back to this royalty nonsense. So do I have a bone to pick with Michelle Obama? No, I don't. I don't know her policies. I know that she's in favor of fitness. I don't know much more than that. But I am not awed by someone who has a famous last name. Oh, my God, it's Michelle Obama. And then the description says, Obama has one thing, with the possible exception of Booker, that the rest of the people on this list lack. True star power. Oh, the stars and celebrities and money. Oh, no, 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 no. Okay. Who did he leave off the list? It's unbelievable. He just flat out left Elizabeth Warren off the list. But wait a minute. Almost everybody, I mean, I can't believe he did that. Because no matter what you think of their politics, clearly Elizabeth Warren has tremendous popularity, and she's one of the leaders of the progressive movement, and by almost any rational standard, one of the leading candidates for 2020. In fact, I think she's clearly the number one candidate for 2020. No, I don't see her. What do you mean? Elizabeth Warren. What name's so? I don't know. Where's her fundraising? But actually, we'll come back to that. Another person he left off the list was Bernie Sanders. But wait a minute. He just came and said, okay, now I know. The reason he left Bernie Sanders off, and I understand it, is that Bernie Sanders is going to be 79 when the next election comes around. So.
All right, enough of that nonsense. But so it just goes to show you people, if that's what they have for, their nominees for running in 2020, in my opinion, they're hit like a soup sandwich. So, but the other thing, too, is, like I said, there was an article. I've got it at Six Semper Tyrannis News, my website, and it states Jamie Dimon is saying that the Democrats don't have a strong candidate running. It says J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon said in an interview on Friday that the Democratic Party does not have a strong candidate for the 2020 presidential election. He said, the thing about the Democrats is that they will not have a chance, in my opinion. He says they don't have a strong centrist, pro-business, pro-free enterprise person, Dimon told Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business's Wall Street Week. He says, the American public is not clamoring for more government. They were angry about the Great Recession. They blamed the banks. They blamed Washington. But they're also angry about the bureaucracy. And, I mean, come on, that's why President Trump won in 2016-17. Democrats, states are set to attempt to take back both chambers of Congress in 2018, while speculation swirls around a new slew of potential candidates to take on President Trump in 2020. Figures such as Senator Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and former President Joe Biden have all been floated. And, well, of course, you heard Cenk. I basically agreed with him on all of that. Dimon, who serves as chairman of the Business Roundtable, said in November that Trump would likely be the one-term president, but now he has since says he regrets those comments. That's interesting, because the economy is doing well. And I'm sure that J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, is doing quite well, and his portfolios and his stock investments and all of that good stuff. I'm sure that he has, probably another yacht or something now, and doing great. So he regrets what he said. So there you have it. So people, listen, I'm going to wrap up the show now. I do have a call-in number. I should have probably told people. Our guest call-in number is 347-989-1999. And so if you're out there and you happen to be listening, You are welcome to call in. I should have probably said that during the show. I don't do shows often, so once I set up, I'm thinking about setting up a weekly show at a specific time so that, you know, people can get acclimated to that, and then we can have some call-ins and some talks. And but the important thing is, people, is to, you know, think about this. Don't think about Republican or Democrat. Don't think about Trump or Obama or any of these people, but just think about our nation and what we want for our families, for our neighbors, for our country. You know, that's the most important thing. I think a lot of times we get caught up in this political nonsense, and then it causes contention, and everybody wants to be right. You know, I mean, nobody likes being wrong, but, you know, being humble is important, and accepting facts and then going with facts to then base your beliefs on them is the important thing. So, but so far we haven't been in war. We've been, President Trump has been in office for a while. The economy's looking good, you know, all-time low unemployment, record Wall Street, new records are being set all the time. And, you know, for the most part, foreign policy is doing well. ISIS has been routed. Now, there are some reports that speculate that if we don't keep that, you know, momentum going, that they could recrop, resurge in other areas. So hopefully we can, you know, keep them down, keep them at bay. But it is important to stand our ground, so to speak, and get our borders correct and get our policies in order to protect the United States of America for all Americans. I'm talking about black, white, Chinese, Japanese, whatever you are, Indian, Native American, and so on. And to try to break this propaganda that states that you know, that there's racism just cropping up behind every rock. It's being perpetuated for a reason, people. They want division for a reason. There is order out of chaos, and that's what the elites want. They want social engineering that brings about their form of government, the government that they want. That's not going to be in favor of you, whether you're Republican or Democrat, if they get what they want. There'll be severe oppression. There'll be the stifling of intellectual thought. There'll be the stifling of freedom of movement, freedom of thought, freedom of speech. You know, this is what we have to fear. And so, for the sake of all my black brothers and sisters, my white brothers and sisters, my yellow and red and whatever color brothers and sisters, we have to fight the propaganda, and we have to be compassionate towards one another. And even if we disagree, we don't want to rip each other apart trying to prove each other right. Love one another. Be patient. Be patient with me. Be patient with others. And on the daily basis, don't allow the mainstream media to get you to think the way they want you to think, but think for yourselves, you know, and that's basically it. That's what we need to do. We need to be patient, be tolerant, love one another, care for one another. If we can do that, then all will be well in the garden. So for Six Emperor Tyrannus News, I am Mark Matheny saying protect your own rights, because if you don't, no one else will. Thanks for listening.